Hi, it's Dave. Welcome to episode 251. Today we've got a live stream going on. Joe Rogan just interviewed Elon Musk, released it today, and it's a 3.5 hour interview. It's on Spotify. I'm going to link it in the video description below. Check it out if you have time. In this video, I'm going to try to save your time, but also try to give a different angle and kind of share my reaction, but I'm going to share the 10 highlights that I kind of gained from this interview. All right. The first highlight is number one. Starship is on the edge. And so what I mean by this is Elon was asked by Joe Rogan if, you know, Elon was surprised that Starship, let's say, exploded on the test while testing. And Elon replied that, you know, he wasn't surprised. It's expected, right, for a test vehicle to explode. Because when you're living on the edge, you're innovating fast and things like that are going to happen. In fact, they should happen. If you never have accidents or mistakes, you're not learning enough, right? And that's a complete different concept of innovation than a lot of the risk-averse corporations and CEOs have. Elon understands the benefit of moving fast, breaking things, learning along the way, readjusting, right? And in the end, the long-term potential is immense because you're moving faster than anyone else. Now, on the flip side, there is some short-term, I say, risk and volatility toward this type of approach because it's possible that you can push too hard on something, meaning that you're pushing something so hard that it becomes actually a big risk. For example, take the Model 3 production ramp. Tesla and Elon really banked on this alien dreadnought factory plan that was super, you know, complex with robots delivering each part along the way. However, in the end, they had to disassemble a lot of that and go with a more simple approach and actually make an outdoor tent, which is a simple line. And I remember it was at Autonomy Day. After the event, I had a brief conversation with one of the people in management there, and they were commenting on how, you know, in future factories, they're taking a different approach. They're taking a more simple approach. Rather than adding a ton of complexity in the beginning, they're going to do what they did with the tent, lay it out simply and then add the complexity over time, and how that made a lot more sense. I think when you have a super ambitious CEO like Elon that understands the advantage of moving fast, breaking things, but also has crazy ambition, there are going to be some hiccups along the way, but that's okay because it's really rare to find a CEO who actually has that ambition together with execution. So I think it's a different model of a company and investing when you can find someone who approaches things like that. All right, number two. Yes. Hi to a bunch of people. I'm getting to know actually more and more people that frequent the live stream, but also comment. So yeah, welcome to the live stream here. Number two, Elon mentioned Austin as a boom town, and he called Austin as kind of a mini California in a sense. And he said this comment that was interesting. He said he thinks that Austin will be the biggest boom town in America that America has seen in the past 50 years. And I thought that was actually a big statement. I wish Joe Rogan would have pressed on him more on why he thinks that. I wonder if it's some type of inside knowledge. Has Elon seen kind of development plans for Austin or for housing? Has he seen kind of a 10-year plan or something? Does he know developers? I'm sure Tesla, with their Gigafactory right in kind of this prime growth area of Austin, is privy to a lot of the new developments going on. And I think that would be interesting to find out. Elon also said that when they surveyed Tesla workers, I'm assuming they actually surveyed their headquarters, their engineering team, because that's kind of who they want to target as the people who could potentially move to Austin, right, if they were to set up another headquarters there. Elon said most people said Austin was the number one place that they would want to move to if they had to move. And there wasn't really a number two. Like, silence was number two. And it's kind of interesting to think about why, you know, Austin is picking up the traction that it is. And is Austin really kind of this next big boom town for America? All right. Number three, Elon mentioned Cybertruck is CGI. So computer generated graphics, right? And it's interesting because he's also said that there's going to be limited production this year of Cybertruck and volume production next year. So he's tapering expectations, right? He's going to be, it's lucky if we're going to, you know, really produce that much of Cybertruck this year. He did make this comment though, Cybertruck is CGI, is like alien tech. It's going to change the look of what's on our roads. And that statement, that observation there, I think is actually an understatement. Elon is actually saying that, like, things are going to radically change with the Cybertruck on the road. And I personally have seen the Cybertruck at the Cybertruck reveal event, and it is so much more shocking in person than in images. Like, you can't compare the two. Sometimes things, like, they look similar in images or you get that same emotion, but with the Cybertruck, it's completely different. The emotions you get watching this vehicle in person is completely different than the images you see online. And I can't wait for people to actually see the Cybertruck on the road. You're gonna see looks of shock and horror and disbelief. And just like, it's just in a very emotion. You just can't believe a truck like that, actually someone would design it and produce it, and potentially millions of people would drive it on the road. I definitely think it's one of the biggest design changes and evolutions of a car or a vehicle, right, or a truck ever. And I think it's definitely something that I think is yet to be fully appreciated. Number four, Elon mentioned a potential Tesla van would be a great idea. So Joe Rogan had, you know, this idea of what if you had a solar roof on the car, and Elon's like, oh, the car doesn't have enough surface space. And so they're talking about a potential van, like a Sprinter-based van that had a solar roof, but then maybe the solar roof could extend out, like when stationary. And Elon commented that, yeah, that type of camper van with, you know, a solar kind of array or something, that would be a great idea. And I think, yeah, Elon is already seen that potential. I think he's mentioned a potential Tesla van in the past. It's a proven market, the delivery van, right? The multi-purpose van, the camper van, all of that on a similar platform. And I think it's just a matter of time before Tesla has enough batteries to be able to support a vehicle like that. Right now, Tesla is battery limited in a lot of ways. They've been wanting to produce, for example, the Tesla Semi for the longest time, but they keep on pushing it off because they don't have enough batteries. They'd rather funnel it to production cars where they can sell a lot more and make a bigger difference in some ways. All right, so number five highlight from the interview is vertical takeoff and landing planes might come later. So Elon was a bit hesitant actually to commit to Tesla doing the electric planes. It's an interesting thing. I think Elon is actually kind of keeping his options open. Before, I think it was 2016 or so, Emmett Peppers, he actually asked Elon at a Tesla shareholder meeting if Elon did a vertical takeoff and landing jet, would it be done through Tesla? And Elon kind of indicated at that time it would probably be with Tesla. In this Joe Rogan interview, it kind of seemed more like he didn't want to commit to anything. He said something interesting. He said, no car company has ever done aircrafts. And to call Tesla kind of a car company, I think he's just saying that, hey, maybe we could do, and he called it kind of regime or something. But I think he's leaving his option open that it can actually be a completely separate company if needed. The second thing that was interesting about this, he said, well, I've got a lot of things to do. I've got cars, trucks, boats, and then planes. So if you notice this transition, I thought that was interesting. First you got cars, and then you move into trucks. Trucks are more difficult than cars because you need higher density of batteries. They're less aerodynamic. Smaller cars are much easier in some ways. And then you move into boats. Now this is probably the first time, maybe not the first time, but the first time more actually I've seen Elon actually prioritize where boats, electric boats come in Tesla's plan. So he says, yeah, it's cars, trucks, boats, and then planes. So he's actually putting boats above planes. And so I think we're going to see boats pretty soon, guys. I mean, think about it. If planes, and Elon thinks that actually the potential for the vertical takeoff and landing plane is coming soon with the battery density increasing, I think we might see boats in the next maybe 3 years or so, you know, Tesla boat. I would love that. Here in Austin, where I'm staying right now, they've got this Lake Austin River, and actually they've got boat docks. And I'm like, hey, it would be awesome to have a cool boat, you know, and yeah, Tesla boat. I mean, how can you beat that? Number six highlight of the interview is Starlink Now. So Elon commented that Starlink is happening now. They're, you know, released. They have over 1,000 satellites right now. People are getting reception. They're expanding their beta program. He said that Starlink is best for low to mid density populations, and he explained the reason why. He said with Starlink, you've got this a beam that comes down from this from the satellite, and it covers a wide diameter. And people in that beam area are going to share basically the coverage of that satellite. So it probably wouldn't be best in high density populations like urban populations where a ton of people would say potentially use Starlink and hog up right that beam. It's better to be used in low to medium density populations. That said, this is amazing that Starlink is actually happening right now. It's rolling out, and I think it's one of the most ambitious projects in our kind of in this decade, right? This is going to be a massive internet constellation covering everyone, right, on the planet who can access Starlink, and it's going to cause immense economic, I guess, benefit for many, many people in many, many areas. All right, number seven. Tesla Semi Convoy. So Elon actually described in this video how they're going to roll out the Tesla Semi. And he says, obviously, long term, the Tesla Semi will be fully autonomous. But he says there's a while to get there. And the intermediary step to get to fully autonomous is to do something called a convoy. And now a lot of people have speculated on, you know, what a convoy is and how to do it, et cetera. But Tesla had, Elon gave the details. He says, okay, you have a lead semi with a human driver, let's say overseeing this, and then you have a convoy of many Tesla semis that don't have anyone in the Tesla semi. And then you have a space of 40 to 50 feet in between each semi so that cars can easily get in between the semis and, let's say, exit or get in. And so it's not this dangerous like wall, right? And Elon says this is actually really simple to do because you just, you know, tell each semi behind the lead to follow the next semi, and Tesla's autonomous driving software can do that fairly easy. And so I think this is going to be crazy. It's going to be awesome. Can you imagine Tesla semi, like 10 or 20 in a convoy with one human driver in the front with 40 or 50 feet, you know, in between each of the Tesla semi trucks? Like, this is crazy. I mean, it's crazy to think about, but it's coming soon. This is the intermediary step that Tesla Semi is going to release before full autonomous driving. All right, number eight highlight, AI regulation. Elon Musk reiterated the need to have a regulatory agency to oversee artificial intelligence and where it's headed. And he noted different types of regulatory bodies in the government, like NHTSA or FDA or different things. And he says, you know, sometimes he's had his arguments with regulatory bodies, and we've seen that as well. But he also appreciates the role of having these regulatory agencies, because companies oftentimes can be reckless. They can make a ton of mistakes. But when you have a regulatory agency, especially with critical companies in critical areas, it helps a lot. Number nine highlight is carbon tax suggestion to Biden. So Elon Musk shared that he actually asked the Biden administration, I'm not sure who in the Biden administration, but he says he brought up a suggestion to promote or suggest a carbon tax. What a carbon tax is basically just putting a price or a tax on carbon emissions. And Elon mentioned that it makes sense, right? If you put a price on carbon emissions, then the markets will start to adjust. And the more carbon emissions, right, you make, you have to pay a higher price, a higher tax on that. And therefore, the markets adjust to something that would cost perhaps even less than the carbon, let's say, option with the tax. And in a lot of ways, this makes sense. And it's probably the obvious move that the Biden administration and other governments around the world should do to really make perhaps one of the biggest impacts, right, to carbon emissions and to climate change. Number 10, all right, the last kind of highlight I'll share here is autonomous driving value. Elon Musk shared that what happens after people kind of, after Tesla finishes autonomous driving, or, you know, you have a full self-driving vehicle, what are you going to do in the car? And he said two things. First, you're going to do entertainment, and then you're going to do productivity. What does this mean? It basically means with all this time that you have freed up, in the car, let's say it's 30 minutes to work or 45 minutes to a gathering or back, like, you're going to save a ton of time. And now you can allocate that time to, let's say, other things. And it's interesting, Elon Musk didn't say necessarily productivity as the number one, because he understands human behavior. And human behavior is, yeah, if you've got some free time, you want to kick back, you probably want to be entertained, maybe education too, right? Maybe you watch a ton of YouTube videos, a ton of podcasts, but maybe a ton of games and other things as well. And it brings to the question of what is Tesla trying to become, or what will Tesla become in the future? And a lot of it, I think, is Tesla will need to actually, or can, monetize that time in the robotaxi or in the autonomous driving car. And so now Tesla can become an entertainment portal, or a productivity portal, or education portal, some type of platform, in a sense, where it can offer services, right, to people in the car. Now you might ask, well, I could just watch YouTube on my iPad or on my phone or in my big phone, right, as well. And that's true too. You can carry your own experience into the car, and that's fine. But I think there could be some advantages to having something native in the car. It could just be better presented. It could be better integrated. And I think that's one of kind of Tesla's decade goals, is to really become, right, a substantial entertainment platform company. And that's why you're starting to see like more and more games and more things. And the new Model S actually has this monitor in the back, right? It's an extra monitor for the kids. Overall, I thought this interview was interesting. Overall, it was 3.5 hours of, you know, just kind of more low level chat. I kind of was hoping a little bit more that we can get more into the essence of how Elon thinks and some of the secrets that he's hacked in order to kind of start the companies he does, or to think about and achieve the goals that he is achieving, right? I think there are certain things that he's uncovered in terms of principles and key insights that I would love interviewers to address more and to go really in depth, rather than just kind of cover a million kind of surface topics. But anyways, I thought that overall the interview was a decent watch. Check it out. I'll put it in the Spotify or in the video description below. And I'll take a few questions then. Yeah, if you're short for time, you can end the video now, obviously, at any time. But this is just kind of extra from here on in terms of some random questions that people have. All right. Let's go to, you can write question in all caps, colon, and then your question. That will help me to sort through the live comments a bit. All right. Do you think Elon will make a vertical takeoff and landing jet? Yes, I do definitely think he will. I think he actually genuinely hopes that other people will do it, because he sees progress as the ultimate kind of win-win for everybody. So if there is a capable team that is doing some amazing things that he's like, oh my gosh, these guys are it, I think Elon actually back them, might actually support them and give an investment, and he might choose to not do a vertical takeoff and landing jet. But if people aren't making progress in the pace that he thinks they should, meaning they aren't moving crazy fast and blowing him away, then yes, I do think Elon will do a VTOL jet. Whether he does it in Tesla or not, it depends on a few things. Whether Tesla gives a second CEO compensation plan that makes it worthwhile for Elon to stay in Tesla and really take Tesla to this, you know, next crazy market cap valuation. I think that's likely, the most likely scenario. I also think there is a decently probable scenario. I wouldn't say more than maybe 30% or 40%, but Elon does step away, focuses on SpaceX, but also starts this, let's say, VTOL jet company separately. I think that's definitely a possibility as well. All right, why carbon tax? We would have to add a methane tax, one new tax on every single greenhouse gas emissions. Yeah, I mean, sure, I think probably the carbon tax is probably the most significant. And I think it's all about, you know, the trade-offs of what's your goal and aim. What type of behavior are you trying to incentivize? I think I think Elon has a point where carbon is not being priced correctly, meaning you can release a ton of carbon into the environment that has to be cleaned up somehow, or damages the environment somehow. So there is a cost, but that cost isn't being realized by any company. So the companies that are releasing carbon into the environment aren't paying for the actual cost and damages it does, because it happens later. And so let's say the whole world or humanity, or, you know, just different ways that this price has to be paid. So basically pay for it upfront, and then it will self-correct the behaviors that you're trying to, you know, that you're optimizing for. All right. Yaz Hader says, how much of your portfolio do you plan to allocate for Starlink? For me, it's all about valuation, like, and when I get in. Yeah, if Starlink goes IPO, if it's at a decent valuation where I'm like, hey, I see a clear path for a 10x, right, a market cap valuation in 5 or 10 years, then yeah, I'm going, you know, decently big. It depends also what Tesla's trajectory at that time is. So lots of things are changed. I'm kind of a very active investor in the sense I'm looking at a lot of different factors in my investments. So in, let's say, 3 years or so, Tesla might be in a different place. Maybe I do put, you know, a bigger chunk, I don't know what, maybe 20, 30% into Starlink. I don't know. Or maybe there's another company at that time that I think could do a big jump in market cap. All right. When will you interview the CEO of Arcimoto? So, yeah, I think I'm open to it. Arcimoto, I've looked into it a bit. I'm just not personally, maybe my mind will change, but it reminds me a little bit of kind of the position where I've seen in multiple industries where the Chinese companies just come in and eat up the bottom, you know, and what's left is you've got to have some really high kind of value. And I think with kind of three-wheeled vehicles, what you have in the situation is Tesla is moving downstream with their Model 3 and their Model 2, and they're going to move downstream. And so you've got this immense pressure where Tesla's going to do an amazing 25,000 or even less, right? Cars are going to robotaxis. And then from the bottom, the Chinese ecosystem of manufacturing and costs, especially with stuff like three-wheeled vehicles, if it's not there yet, it's going to get crazy. And I don't know how a company in the US can compete and become a huge winner in that field when you have an immense ecosystem of Chinese companies who will drive down the cost with quality products. That is my big concern for Arcimoto. I definitely open to see how they're wanting to address that. If I could find a decently compelling answer or possibility that they can really significantly address that, they have a clear path to, let's say, a 10 or 20x valuation in 5 or 10 years. I'm open to diving into all that more with the CEO. Tesla fanboy says, how likely do you think it is that the Cybertruck is secretly a boat? He did list trucks, boats. Yeah, I don't think the Cybertruck is a boat. It's just way too heavy. I mean, that thing's a tank. A boat, you want light, you know? When you see a Tesla boat, you're gonna see it. It's a boat, you know. A tank, it's hard to float. Yeah, that Cybertruck is a monster. Yeah, you'll see that. Yeah, people will know what I mean when you see it in person. Ismail Yusuf says, do you think Elon likes to tweet too many jokes? You know, I don't mind Elon tweeting jokes. He could tweet as many jokes as he wants, but I think I'm not that happy about Elon tweeting about crypto when it's actually as jokes with Tesla being in that, with lots of Wall Street folks being very antagonistic or very threatened, not only threatened, but very, I guess, offended, right? And I see, I think people can look at, let's say, for example, Tesla's Bitcoin position and say, oh, it's a great position, it's a great idea, like Bitcoin's going to 10x, et cetera, or even more, they're going to have a lot more cash, you know, they can accept Bitcoin as payments, they're reaching out, marketing to Bitcoin people. There's a lot of pros, and so I'm not denying that there are pros to Tesla buying Bitcoin, but when I look at it from different angles, and that's the thing, it's not always either or. A lot of times there's different angles and different levels of angles, right? Many shades of gray. And on one side, there's a significant percent of big investors who hold the majority of Tesla shares, actually, who could find a move like this as offensive. So what does that exactly mean? Long-term, it might not mean the biggest thing, but it could mean something actually short-term with some potential short-term weakness. All right, Nick Lim says, do you think regulators will be a significant stumbling block to robo-taxi timeline? I think in some regions, yes. For example, EU, they take a long time, right, for regulations, and it could be a stumbling block in some ways or a barrier. I think what Tesla's aim is going to be is whatever areas, regions, municipalities are more open to robo-taxi, giving lax regulations, they're going to attack, they're going to go after those regions first, prove it out, so that other regions will have a proven kind of concept. And so it's not going to be a blanket rollout at all. And by doing that, it's going to help these other municipalities and regions accept robotaxi even quicker. So I'm actually not that concerned about the regulatory aspect. I think it's more about Tesla's need to actually innovate and get full self-driving super good and improving super fast. I think the regulations will come one municipality at a time. All right, Jesse Medina says, given Elon's comment and your own experience, are you looking to buy rental properties in Austin? Austin market is crazy. I mean, so many properties are being bid up 20 to 30% over asking price right now with like 20 or 30 offers. I'm kind of at this place where rental properties, like residential rentals, they're not as exciting to me as, let's say, you know, a decade ago. And I think there's different reasons where it kind of diverts my focus when I, let's say, have a bunch of, let's say, rental properties. And it's just kind of something where... Also, it could be a smaller kind of a small percentage of my overall portfolio, where I'm trying to hack things in my own kind of personal stages right now, where I can potentially do another, let's say, 10x. But at larger numbers, it gets more difficult because the need to preserve for most investors start to kick in, and they kind of diversify and they lose kind of that growth. So I'm trying to find ways to hack that in my psychology, but also in my investment approach. And so there's pros and cons to this. I had this opportunity to pick up kind of a full cash, you know, a rental property in Austin a couple weeks ago. This guy put a property on the market for sale by owner, and I was the first to call him. He says, okay, you have first dibs, you know, check out the property. And I ended up passing on it because I have too much on my plate right now. It's just so many things going on, and it just isn't, the risk reward isn't there for me right now. 10 years ago, it would have been a no-brainer because I could buy it, do a cash out refi, rent the property, and that stuff is worth it. So I think it's just different stages, and I wouldn't take my advice or what I would do to other people, because everyone's situation, I think, is very different. But definitely there's something happening in Austin, but also in real estate, lots of different real estate markets. I think the next 10 years actually will be decent. I did a great interview with Bruce Norris, and he is a real estate timing expert, and he really kind of laid out the case of where real estate is at right now. All right, Wakas Iqbal says, is Elon Musk an alien? No, Elon Musk is a human. Yeah, I think people get kind of carried away with some stuff. Personally, you know, like even simulation theory, yeah, I don't know. I have my doubts. All right, Peyton W. says, when will you interview Charles Hoskinson of Cardano? I am interviewing him. The plan, we have it in the calendar. Interview is on Monday. It probably will be released Tuesday or Wednesday. I have to edit. I don't think we're going to do it live. Actually, I'm not sure. But yes, he is the founder of Cardano and a much requested person to interview. If you have any tips on how to kind of dive deep into Cardano, if you have some great articles or stuff, hit me up, put in the comments, or hit me up on DM me on Twitter. I appreciate that. All right, AG says, what do you think will be the biggest investment surprise of 2021? You know, if I knew that, actually every investor probably has some ideas. Some of the areas I'm looking at, I'm actually looking into some parts of the battery supply chain where I think that some companies might benefit from the massive increase of Tesla batteries, and some of the suppliers, some of kind of the low level supply chain folks might benefit. I think that is an interesting area. Second area I'm just currently researching is on housing. I think housing has some interesting tailwinds with just the Fed printing money, with kind of people flocking to safer assets. I'm curious on, what's the best way to look at housing and builders specifically. Third area I'm really interested in is in DeFi. I'm actually more interested currently in the potential of DeFi than, than the native kind of cryptocurrencies, but I'm just fascinated by when adoption and usage spike so much. And that's something I'm definitely looking into as well. There are some other areas as well. All right, Sean says, question about Lemonade. What are your thoughts of Daniel Schreiber, CEO, selling a majority of his shares? Are you still holding? Yeah, I don't think Daniel Schreiber sold the majority of his shares. My rough calculations was probably sold about a third of his shares. He still probably has two-thirds or so. Pros and cons to it. I mean, he has a right to sell as many shares as he wants. He is older. He's not, say, in his 20s. So, you know, there's probably a case to be made that, hey, it's rational, it's wise to take some off the table. He did tweet saying that the vast majority of his shares and his co-founder Shai's are still in Lemonade, and he doesn't see that changing anytime soon. I would like a little bit more color on what he plans to do with the third that he cashed out, but he doesn't have to give that. That's obviously not mandatory. But overall, my Lemonade position is the same. I kind of bought a chunk that I felt, you know, I wouldn't regret, you know, in the sense of the size. And I'm like, I'm going to ride it until they significantly change the story, meaning their execution significantly fails or their trajectory significantly changes. All right, Dilem De Salva says, can you please interview Elon? Like you said, I don't see anyone who has interviewed him on depth. actually, my wife keeps on telling me, you know, I should interview Elon. And she's like, oh, I should write him a letter and all this stuff. I think, I think the interview, rather than one interview, I think, and it doesn't have to be me. Here's the thing. I don't care if it's me per se. It doesn't have to benefit me or my channel. I just think the angle I take with Elon is he's got some things in his mind that has yet to be completely unpacked and shared publicly, where it's the way he thinks about and the way he approaches certain things, how to solve certain problems, how to create companies and lead and manage some of the best engineers in the world to join, right, his mission and how he sees risk and mission and goals. And there's so many hacks that are combined that it's actually, most people aren't seeing it clearly enough that actually something that Elon is doing can be reproducible in different ways. Now, you might say, okay, there can't be another Elon. I'm not saying there's gonna be another Elon. What I'm saying is that it's not that Elon is such a special man or special human. That's not the key thing. In my opinion, this is just my opinion, but I think pretty clearly, is that it's more the principles that he's caught on to. Not just one principle, but a multitude of different varying principles. And actually, part of it is this compounding. If you're able to kind of nail a principle so clearly and see its power, you're able to gain access into more principles because you have more motivation and more clarity, you have a foundation of learning. So what Elon has done is he's hacked certain principles that have given him the ability to see problems, to see how he can solve those problems, how he could use the economy, a capitalist system, business, how he can use investments, how he can use mission and goals, how he can use engineering, design, etc., to in so many different, you know, principles all together, where, you know, he's unlocked and he's become the wealthiest person in the world as a result. But this is just the beginning. I mean, the guy's like, what, late 40s or something? Is he even 50 or something? I mean, this is kind of crazy. And the missions he has is still in the early innings, right? Think about SpaceX. It's like almost in its infancy, right? If the vision is to, you know, colonize Mars or to make a civilization on Mars, like this is like just starting. So the potential that Elon has across also his many businesses is immense. But who's unpacking these principles, right? These hacks And because there's so many, it doesn't look like they're hacks. It looks like Elon is supernatural power. He has supernatural power or abilities. So people don't go into the hacks. They don't ask him about the principles deep enough to uncover these principles so that people can then apply them, right? And so in my opinion, this is my own opinion, Elon Musk's greatest contribution might be his companies, but there's another angle, is it could be his contributions on these principles, right? His angle, so that other people can actually be empowered to take these hacks, right? These principles, and apply them and do some amazing things for humanity in the world. But my frustration is that who's doing that? Who's really going in depth enough where it's giving justice to these principles that Elon has? Who cares who interviews them? Someone who takes it with that angle and can go deep should do it. And you know, it would be awesome, but I don't think one interview is enough. I think the best scenario would be Elon committing to something once every 3 months, do that for 5 years or so, make it a 2 or 3 hour interview, and lay out all the principles, you know, and really leave a legacy behind for people in terms of how things were done, right? I think Elon has this idea of writing a book. I think that's great. You know, a book would be awesome. I would be the first one to read the book and learn from the book. I think that's one avenue. Maybe there'll be some amazing things. I just think another avenue, though, could be kind of the straight sharing, right? And the focus of actually on his kind of most valuable pieces of wisdom, right? Had unlocked the most potential. I would love to see that. Again, it doesn't have to be me. You know, I don't care, you know, if my channel gets no credit at all, right? If someone could do that, if Elon, or if someone who knows Elon is listening, right, I think this is definitely something that I would feel passionate. I think a lot of people would appreciate as well. All right, Chris Genovese says, "Hi, Dave. Will you invest in Rivian if it IPOs this year?" I think two things. One is it all depends on the valuation. Sometimes I'll get into a small position in a company just because, A, you know, it's undervalued. I could see a pop, so I actually might take a short term position in a speculative play. It just might not be a huge position, right? It might be a very small percent. That might be one of the cases. I don't know. I just have to see. I'm not against Rivian. I'm not against its potential. I just think that, you know, with the bulk majority of my portfolio, I want something that I have high conviction in, that I know that this company is going to be the outsized winner. Later tonight, I'm doing an interview on Charles Choi's channel. He runs a Korean investing YouTube channel. I had him on my channel a few months ago. But one of his questions that he emailed me is, I'll share it right here. It says, we are dealing with the stock market that is evolving really fast and dramatically recently. For some investors, that could be quite scary. Please share some of your advice for beginning investors. And as I was thinking about this, I'm like, one of the things is because it moves so fast and news goes so fast, we're tempted to be so reactive. Okay, you know, invest in this and this and this. Everyone's investing. You're trying to get this, you know, short-term gain, and you lose some, you win some, et cetera. It's kind of a mass chaos in investing. What I would direct, and kind of my kind of different angle is, well, whatever you invest in, I think perhaps the biggest opportunities are the ones that you have the highest conviction in, that you see higher conviction than other people because of some type of insight that you have, some type of angle that you have. You have experience with their product. You might be some insight in their management or in the industry, or you might know all of the competitors really well and you understand that they don't have a chance against this company. There's some type of insight that you might have that leads you to such great conviction that leads to an outsized kind of, you know, investment in this opportunity. And I think that type of investment opportunity is often overlooked and people don't search for it enough. One example is when the housing market crashed 10 years ago, my wife was asking, how do you know the housing market's going to rebound? And I looked at her and I'm like, because I had done a deep dive in real estate and we actually had toured the 10 hardest hit kind of areas in California, Nevada, and Arizona to see on the ground what was going on during that time. I was telling her the essence of housing, the essence of real estate is you get a piece of land and a, let's say a building on top of that land, but you get the rights to hold that indefinitely, right? You can pass that on to generations, and it's an amazing right and privilege to have with real estate. And no matter how pessimistic people can get, and people were getting super pessimistic at that time with real estate, they're like, "What is real estate ever going to recover, right?" I'm like, all of this is going to change. The whole mood on real estate is going to change one day, and people are going to be so bullish on real estate. It's going to be scarce because the essence of real estate is so powerful, right? Like, you can't, like, there's a limitation on the number of great urban areas or cities, even the suburbs around the cities. Like, some people say, "Oh man, the suburbs are dead," right? Because of urban growth and stuff. I'm like, dude, you don't understand. Suburbs, it's hard to make a suburb next to an urban area because there's so much infrastructure, so much planning and coding, code and laws and jurisdiction, all this stuff. There's a reason why you can't just expand, let's say, LA suburbs within, you know, that are 30 minutes away indefinitely. There isn't enough space even. And so, that conviction I had, let's say, for example, with real estate was so clear. I'm like, you know, this is one of the greatest opportunities to invest because in 5 or 10 years, right, real estate is going to go up, and you can use leverage in real estate too. You can do up 20% down or whatever, borrow the rest. If real estate doubles, you're doing a 5x, right? On a pretty safe investment because of the essence, right? The core thesis of real estate I thought was still intact and super bullish. I mean, that's kind of my take on investing is with a beginner investor, that's kind of the priority to have is to find that type of investment where you have a super high level of conviction and you have some type of advantage with that conviction. That's where I think you'll have an advantage over just kind of randomly, you know, throwing plays out or, you know, picking stocks with every, you know, new suggestion that comes up in your timeline or feed or whatever. But to each their own, right? If you can figure out your own method, more power to you. There's more than one way to learn how to invest, and this is just definitely one way. John Gresham says, DeFi Dave, love it. Yeah, actually, Replica says, I need to watch that video on DeFi. Definitely, great video. Robert Leshner, founder of Compound, I interviewed him last week. Fantastic interview. DeFi, is amazing. I'm still learning more though, but TK2X says, thoughts on an Austin get together. I'm over on Rainy Street. Lots of good spots here to grab a table. Yeah, definitely. Definitely open to doing an Austin meetup. Maybe in a couple months or so. That'd be fun. Austin, there's a massive amount of new development as far as 45 minutes north of downtown. I live in Liberty Hill and it's bananas. Yeah. I heard up in, yeah, just all the outskirts areas of Austin is immense. I heard there's a lot of waiting lists, even for new construction, lots of stuff. Question, would you ever consider making a Discord where your community can share ideas, thoughts, resources on the idea of potential 100 baggers? You have built something really special. Yeah, you know, I'm actually dying to, like, this is something I think about a lot, is when I first created my channel, I'm like, hey, I don't see kind of a framework and people really kind of going for big winners, but in a calculated way, right? With due diligence, with kind of a sound kind of approach, etc. A lot of people were just like throwing darts, right? Blindfolded, trying to think, oh, it's going to be a multi-bagger. But I kind of, you know, I've always felt that process to find a 10x, even a potential 100x company could be hacked through different ways of how you approach it. A lot of people disagree. And I think that's actually great they disagree because it actually kind of validates that there could be other ways as well. But I think a lot about the potential of the community and people who join together with this type of vision, what we could do when we share resources and share ideas, share research. And I've been working on like a site to try to, you know, maybe gather that research together or to build a community. I think Discord is kind of all over the place. I mean, in my experiences, maybe I just don't know how to use it correctly, but you know, I was looking into building and we have been looking into doing stuff natively, just kind of from scratch, what we could do to build some type of community. I'm not sure yet, though. I mean, we tried it with about 20 people, and it didn't completely work out, right? So I'm trying to figure out what could be the best way to bring together community. But that's the other thing. If you can bring together, let's say, 1,000 people who really put in research and really have a clear framework, and they agree on like the criteria of what they're looking for, and you bring all of that effort together, that's an amazing thing. I don't know how like Wall Street can compete with that personally. I mean, first off, they have a different paradigm and a different model, different goals they're searching. But I think, there's definitely something about gathering people, and it's one of the missing pieces, I think, in investing. Chris Begeman says, do you believe in diversification? Yes, I actually do believe in diversification in some ways. My approach to diversification is quite different than most people, and I can sum it up as I like to personally, and I think this is probably one of the best ways to think about it, is have one safe basket and then one kind of go for it investing basket. The safe basket, yes, it should be, I believe, more safe. But this basket can actually include different things. It doesn't have to just include investments, meaning if you do have good health, you have high income, let's say you're in a great job, or you have equity in a company or something, that can actually be part of your safe basket too. So in other words, it's not just your investments, but it's also the position. Or if you have super low living expenses too, that kind of, there's a lot of criteria that fit into your safe basket where it's like, how much can you live without working at all? Well, you know, maybe you have low, or like how fast can you save as well? And so once you have kind of a safe basket that you're growing, then you can start also invest or having a more high growth baskets that you're investing. And I think this takes a different mindset. It takes a mindset where you're like, it's not about preservation, it's about finding the big winners, right? And that's kind of the dichotomous approach that I personally take. And I've always kind of taken it because it's made sense the most to me, because I feel it's two different goals. Like retirement, to me, in my opinion, is more of a safer preservation. Like you need that basket for, you know, safety. Like people are counting on that. Like to take huge risks on that doesn't completely make sense to me. But when you have an investing kind of a go for it portfolio or basket, it doesn't make sense to be consumed with preservation. I think that kind of hijacks the potential of the big winners that you can see. And so rather than mixing the two approaches, I kind of like, you know, separating them. And that's kind of been my journey. Previously to this point, it's been real estate holdings as kind of income producing, low expenses, living expenses, all of that, our business, et cetera, all in the safe basket. And then we've had this kind of go for it basket that we originally put 100% or even more into Tesla. But this changes over time. I'm reconsidering my safe basket right now because real estate does take some management. There's a, you know, different things for different stages, I believe. All right, halfway through your interview with Dan Held. Yes, fantastic interview, Dan Held. I'll go ahead and close up the live stream right now. We have, in a couple of days, I'll release my interview with Robert Breedlove. He's another Bitcoin proponent. Had a fantastic conversation with him. On Friday, I'm interviewing Tom Gardner. He is a co-founder of The Motley Fool, kind of a legendary stock advisory group, big following. Excited to do that. And then next Monday, I'm interviewing Charles Hoskinson from Cardano, and it's going to be fun. Hopefully, I'll get some more interviews and different things lined up next week as well. Anyways, I hope you guys have had a great week, and we'll have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you guys soon. See you later. Bye.